Welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Pablo Torre. This is Dominique Foxworth. That is Mina Kimes. Let's talk about sports.
How will you remember Hank Aaron?
So I'm 35, and my living memory of Hank Aaron is always Hank Aaron defined in opposition to Barry Bonds. In that version of the morality play, I recall that Reggie Jackson quote saying that Hank Aaron and his 755 home runs, that man is the people's champion. And if anyone else is in my general age bracket, I feel like it's really important to go back and learn about how it was that Hank Aaron was the opposite of the American people's champion for a really long time. There are crazy numbers as he was making that march towards 755, as he was making that march to beating Babe Ruth's most sacred home run record, because apparently the Postal Service in the mid-70s did some calculating, and they found out that no non-politician had been receiving more mail than Hank Aaron. And a lot of that mail, spoiler alert, was just abject racism and threats to the point where the FBI needed to guard his daughter. Hank Aaron is a guy that, honestly, on top of being an incredible historical athlete, is essential to understanding the trajectory of American culture and American history. He started off in the Negro Leagues. He was the first black star for a Southern sports team when the Braves moved to Atlanta in 66. To see Hank Aaron only through the home run thing is honestly to miss so much of what made his journey so remarkable in its longevity and in its perseverance.
Pablo, you cover pretty much all of the history of Henry Aaron, the non-baseball stuff, and that's frankly the only stuff that I know and only stuff that I cared about, because I never was a big baseball fan, and I'm 37, and my introduction to Henry Aaron was not about him being a great baseball player, but it was about him being a pioneer, about him carrying that torch that was passed on to him from Jackie Robinson and cross sports too, Paul Robeson and Jim Brown. He was one of those many athletes, black athletes back then, who understood that they were the most prominent black people in American society. And with that, not only came the responsibility to be great on the playing field of their choice, in this case, the diamond, but also to be magnanimous and patient and resilient and kind in the face of all the kind of abject and overt, not even thinly veiled racism that he experienced. So that was my understanding of Hank Aaron. That's the Hank Aaron I grew up being taught about and admiring and looking up to. And he never failed in that regard, which is so incredibly impressive to me in an age where we have access to so much more media and so much more attention. I can't imagine how different the experience was for him. And obviously I played and was called names and things like that on occasion, but to be at the point where your daughter, your college student daughter, needs protection because you're trying to hit balls over a fence, like, that to me is a burden that no single person should have to carry, no entire community should have to carry. But Henry Aaron did it with grace and perfection throughout, and that's something to be applauded, but not to ignore that situation existed, and it hasn't fully been cleansed from our society. So it's sad to see Henry Aaron go away in a time where we're under a lot of that similar turmoil, but it is still great to see the contribution that he's made.
So, Dominique, I did grow up a baseball fan, and I remember hearing all about Hank Aaron's exploits, really his consistency. I mean, the man hit 30-plus home runs as regularly over the course of a season as some of us breathe. He will go down in history as one of the greatest power hitters to play the game, one of the greatest athletes to ever pick up a baseball bat. But I also remember at a very young age learning about the virulent racism he experienced while doing so. Pablo talked about the summer of 1973. I very vividly remember being young and thinking that was not very long ago. And it was an important lesson for people like me, who had the privilege of not being exposed to that sort of racism, to learn that one of our country's greatest heroes at the time, despite his excellence, could not escape its ugliness. That's a lesson that we still have to learn today, but it is as much a part of Hank Aaron's legacy as everything he did on the diamond.
And it is also just important to say how unbelievably incredible at sports he was. Like, look at that man's Wikipedia page. I know we're journalists. We should not be turning to Wikipedia in general for our sourcing. But the 25 All-Star games. 25. If you were to look at his statistics and you say, okay, the guy had 755 home runs. Take away those home runs. The guy still has 3,000 plus hits. More than Babe Ruth. Like, on every level on which Hank Aaron is more important than the normal athlete, all of the implications societally we just discussed, him as one of the finest athletes we've ever seen, just look at Wikipedia someday and have your mind blown.
All right, you sports gas bags, who you got on Sunday, Packers or Bucks?
All right, so Vegas likes the Packers by a little. They are favored in this game at Lambeau. I get that. Aaron Rodgers just dropped 484 yards on the number one defense in the league. No one's ever done that in the history of the Elias Sports Bureau. I get all of that. But I have been saying this one stat for 3 weeks, and I just got to jump off it because I keep on saying Tom Brady, when pressured, is Nick Mullins, 31st in QBR. When he's not, he is 5th in QBR. Excellent, right? So what happens? Washington football team has an amazing defensive line. Brady soars to the next round. What happens next? Okay, the Saints, an even better defensive line. What happens? Brady looks even more dominant. So what I did was I went to Tom Brady's Pro Football Reference stats page, and I clicked on postseason, and I saw a CVS receipt tumble out, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to not pick against this guy. So give me Tom Brady and the Buccaneers this weekend.
So I've had a hard time picking this game because fundamentally I believe Green Bay is the better team. But Tampa Bay is the highest variance team in the playoffs. They are truly the embodiment of the Florida man. They are just as likely to drop 40 points on you as they are to get pulled over on the side of the road with a truck full of rare alligators. You never know what you're going to get from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I still lean Green Bay, and I think it's going to turn out a bit differently this time around for a couple of reasons. Tom Brady was not dominant against the Saints. The Bucs defense won that game, and the pass rush for Green Bay is heating up at the right time. Rashawn Gary, Kenny Clark, Za'Darius Smith, I think they can get pressure, especially against a backup guard for the Bucs. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, Aaron Rodgers kind of imploded the last time these two teams played. I don't think that happens again. I think Devontae Adams is a mismatch for Carlton Davis. Just don't look the Bucks in the eye, Green Bay. Just don't make eye contact with them, and you can get out of this alive.
Yeah, I'm leaning very hard to the Packers because I rewatched that Week 6 game a couple of times over this week as we get ready for this, and the Packers were dominant for the first quarter. Like, they were in complete control of this game. They were moving the ball however they wanted, and they were shutting down. Well, I guess also the Bucs were short-circuiting because that's what the Bucs do. That's what Florida man of the NFL does on occasion is they short-circuit. They get penalties. They just do ridiculous things that you don't understand. They go deep on second and one when the game is on the line. They throw turnovers and interceptions, and then all of a sudden they got a pick six. All of a sudden they poke out a fumble, and they're beating Drew Brees at home. So you never know what to expect with them. But also, what felt like the most anomalous thing in that situation was Aaron Rodgers turning the ball over. And I broke down Todd Bowles' blitz packages. He had some really impressive blitz packages that didn't even necessarily get home. The impressive part was the coverages on the back end. They were blitzing enough to make Aaron Rodgers nervous and backpedal and throw it off his back foot and then throw into a squat corner in certain situations, which is just a type of mental error that you can't expect Aaron Rodgers to continue to make. So that's what I'm saying. That's why I believe the Packers will win, because if you watched the game last week, and again, Pablo, you used the word dominant in Tom Brady. I don't know what you were watching, but maybe he did win. They weren't dominant last week. They got four turnovers and scored touchdowns off of three of them. So if they do not get turnovers from the Packers, I don't see them finding a way to win.
Can we just replay Dominique and I in slow motion our faces when Pablo said the word dominant to describe Tom Brady last week? Because I think we had the exact same reaction yeah. at the exact same time.
I'm sorry, guys. Who got the W? What's more dominant a statistic than a W?
Patty Mahomes practiced yesterday and seems on track to play. Does that make you think the Chiefs will definitely beat the Bills?
The word definitely there is just outright disrespectful. Not only because Josh Allen, guys, is really good, it turns out, but also because if you look at the Chiefs' schedule, these last nine games, they are 8-1. The one loss was Chad Henne, of course, starting at quarterback in Week 16. But the other eight, those wins, they were all super close, like shockingly close. They all came within less than a touchdown. So the Chiefs are the defending Super Bowl champion. They are the defending reigning favorite to win this thing again. But to say that they're definitely going to do anything with or without Mahomes seems insulting to Buffalo, and they should be insulted.
I was just waiting for you to say that last week Josh Allen was dominant when, of course, they won, but he was not dominant. He played well enough to make the plays that he needed to make. And I do think that that team is good enough to beat the Chiefs. But so much of what we do is like narrative driven, because if the Chiefs weren't coming off a Super Bowl win, we would be saying they know how to win the close games. They got it figured out. It's just because we remember the Chiefs as being this dominant juggernaut that somehow it's a criticism of them that they've only lost one game in their last 25, including multiple comebacks. I think at one point in the Super Bowl, they had a 2% probability of winning, and they won that game. I'm not going to bet against that team. I understand that Patrick Mahomes is coming off of concussion protocol, hopefully, and that he has an injury to his foot or toe or something, but it didn't seem to impact him that much during the game. They were running design running plays for Patrick Mahomes during the game. Obviously, he was limping a little bit afterwards, but he didn't leave the game because of that. Assuming that his brain is good enough for him to play, I don't see the foot injury being enough to hamper them. And their defense also steps up in these moments. I can guarantee you that Josh Allen is going to have to account for where Tyrann Mathieu is at all times or pay for it. So I'm going to lean with the team that's lost one game in the past 25 and stick with Patrick Mahomes.
If you've been taking a drink every time someone on this show has said the word dominant, you are on the floor right now. It's also 2:30 p.m.-ish Eastern, so that's on you. Okay, so Friday. The producers gave us an escape hatch by phrasing this question as, will the Chiefs definitely win? No, of course not. I went back and watched the last game. Dominique, you're not the only one who grinds tape on this show. And I don't really see it playing out the same way. The Chiefs pressured Josh Allen on 55% of his dropbacks. They blitzed him like crazy. He averaged 3.4 yards per attempt against the blitz. He struggled. Since then, Josh Allen has become an absolute terminator against the blitz with Stephon Diggs and has improved a lot even as this season has gone along. Meanwhile, on the other side of the football, the Bills defense mostly sat back in their soft zones, let Kansas City run the ball on them. I actually think that's a good approach. But if Patrick Mahomes is hampered in any way in terms of his mobility, yes, Dominique, he's still going to be great, but it'll be a little bit less great, and it's possible that Buffalo can turn up the heat. All of that said, I still think Kansas City's going to win. I just threw in a bunch of caveats so that I can't get aggregated and Bills fans can't come after me because I am terrified of them.
They'll be busy coming after me, Mina. Don't worry.
That's true. It's true.
Up next on HQ.
Minshew, while it's sort of a bit, he might not be in Jacksonville next year. Okay, like what happens when he rolls into, I don't know, San Francisco with that look? It'll be like when you see like a rare spotted leopard from one part of the world in the Bronx Zoo and it just feels wrong.
Do you question who has the better new hair, Gardner Minshew or Michael Beasley?
Wow, so I haven't seen Gardner Minshew in a while, so let's check back in.
Hey, baby. You want to come take a ride with the Mississippi Mud Flap?
Yeah, the shaking of the party end of the mullet just made me super uncomfortable. So let's see what Michael Beasley has.
Oh.
Huh.
Huh.
There's so much to process.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
The second shot is throwing me for a loop here.
Yeah, it's the angle. It's his optimal angle, and it's the eyes that are really making
me really... it appears to me that Minshew is obviously just, like, in on the joke on being the Mississippi mud flap. Like, I don't feel like Minshew really thinks he looks good. Michael Beasley, he knows that whatever he is doing, he knows there's an audience for it. And whatever audience is out there for it, they are obsessed with that. So I got to give it to Michael Beasley. I don't like that look. That's not doing it for me. But there is a group of young people who are watching that like, let me get a bite of that.
I agree with you. I think Beasley has curls that I personally envy. Minshew, while it's sort of a bit, he might not be in Jacksonville next year. Okay. Like, what happens when he rolls into, I don't know, San Francisco with that look? It'll be like when you see like a rare spotted leopard from one part of the world in the Bronx Zoo and it just feels wrong. That's going to be Gardner Minshew on the sideline in New York or a major city with that hair and the whole thing. And I don't know what everyone's going to make of it.
That reminds me that I actually did spot Michael Beasley in the wild in New York City one day, and I know it was him because he was wearing a wristwatch on his ankle.
Do you question if this was the only way to bring this running back down?
So I understand that we're going out to Japan and Japanese football. College football, which I didn't know existed. So let's go dive into Asia.
Oh. We're going.
Well, now we know what happened.
Oh, no.
So number 25 here feels he's worth spot shadowing as he's just mashing the B button over and over again, uppercutting.
Stretcher time!
Oh, no.
The very rare, actual, serious medical response to a video involving someone getting repeatedly hit in the testicles. I think that is a first, both on the planet and also certainly for highly questionable.
I mean, he's just trying to punch the ball out. That's a good defensive back trying to create a turnover. That's it.
Oh, now I can't think of anything else but like a bunch of Japanese college students getting like an American guide to football and reading the words punch the ball out and just interpreting it differently. Also, if there's Japanese college football, there must be Korean college football, right? And perhaps your girl could be the Kirk Herbstreit of Korea.
That's actually not the first time we've seen a stretcher in a situation like this.
Oh, yep. That is
The speed at which those EMTs are taking him out of there is concerning.
Tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern, Warriors and Jazz.
So let's be honest about why we're really here. It's because the Jazz played a basketball game. The crew at Inside the NBA, the best NBA show in the history of NBA shows, had thoughts on it that were less than kind.
Part of this is Shaq. I said tonight that you are one of my favorite players, but you don't have what it takes to get to the next level. I said it on purpose. I wanted you to hear it. What do you have to say about that?
All right. That's it.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay, cool.
I've been hearing that since my rookie year. You know, I'm just going to get better and do what I do.
Good.
At the end of the day.
Well, that's what I wanted to hear you say. Yes, love your game, brother. Keep it up.
Appreciate it.
Has anyone ever said, all right, cool, and not had a tail of some kind between their legs? That felt incredibly uncomfortable for me on Shaq's behalf. Dominique, are you intrigued?
I mean, not by the game, but I'm intrigued by Shaq's roundabout compliments, because I think what he was trying to do is tell Donovan Mitchell that it doesn't matter what people think and that he could overcome it. I don't know. It was just uncomfortable.
Yeah, he was trying to say that, but he was also the person who was saying all of those things.
He was. You got to kind of respect it, because I feel like in that situation, most people would say something like, a lot of people are saying that you can't take it to the next level. Shaq was like, a lot of people are saying it, a lot of people right here.
Mina, are you intrigued?
I'm not. I think this is what pickup artist culture refers to as negging, right? Yes. Where you say the mean thing to someone's face in the hopes of eliciting some sort of playful reaction. But as is the case with actual pickup artists, it wildly backfired for Shaq. There's a lesson there.
There's just some great veteran savvy from Shaq, though, who's basically like, I talked a lot of trash about you. I'm going to demand that you would have listened to it, and now I'm going to take credit for motivating you as a result, whether you listen to it or not. That is all from us here at Highly Questionable. That's Dominique Foxworth over there.
You missed it up.
You could find him yelling at Mike Greenberg sometimes. Mita Kimes, she has a podcast with her dog. Go find that. She also talks about NFL things all the time. They'll be grinding so much tape this weekend that they're going to have friction marks all over their bodies.
Don't you have a podcast too?
Oh, ESPN Daily. Thanks for asking. Let's subscribe. Yeah, please.
Let's go dominate.